Today's episode of the Sacktown Royalty Show is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want.
It's the Sacktown Royalty Show. Here's your host, Greg Wissinger.
Welcome to the Sacktown Royalty Show. I'm your host, Greg Wissinger. Excited to be welcoming this week's guest, our old friend from SB Nation's Denver Nuggets blog, Denver Stiffs, Nate Timmons. Nate, how you doing?
Good, man. I'm hearing rumors that the Sacramento Kings and the Nuggets are just going to become one team.
I think you're confused. They're just going to completely swap rosters.
Okay, that's what it is. Yeah, a lot of closeness, I guess we'll get into between the two teams. Very, very odd.
Yeah, so obviously we're having you on because there's suddenly a lot of similarities in history of, you know, people and personnel and coaches, and now there's trade rumors between the two teams. So we've got a lot of commonalities to discuss tonight.
Yeah, no doubt about it. God.
So let's jump on in. I mean, the big news for you guys this past week, you hired Michael Malone to be your new head coach. How do you feel about that?
I think I like it. You know, when it was first announced, I was pretty surprised just from, you know, reading stuff on your guys' website, as well as like Cowbell Kingdom and I think Aaron Brewski and Jason Jones. Like everybody was pretty much saying that since Pete D'Alessandro is here, he wasn't going to get the gig. And now then he got the gig and I was like, well, this kind of goes against even stuff we were hearing before D'Alessandro was even involved. We kind of heard that Malone was a long shot, so I guess a lot of the information kind of going around Denver was wrong. But he seems like a really interesting guy, and you know, obviously, like you guys have said, straight shooter, honest, funny. But we're trying to figure out, you know, exactly how he's going to coach this team, because he's been talking a lot about, you know, playing with a quicker pace and a lot of transition and fast breaking, and that's just kind of interesting to us at this point in time.
Yeah, it's definitely something that's worth keeping an eye on. What I think is interesting is, you know, you and I did a Q&A for Denver Stiffs, and while I was doing that, I noticed that the pace that Malone had the Kings playing at ended up being pretty much the same pace that they finished the year at, which was good for eighth in the league. So it's not like they were a slow team. But they did play, you know, a lot of defense, and they weren't always looking to push the ball as fast as even some Kings fans want. I mean, in kind of hindsight, all of the flaws of Michael Malone in Sacramento got kind of brushed under the rug because everyone was upset he got fired. But I think it will be interesting. I'm curious to see how much his coaching style adapts to the players he has.
Did he talk in Sacramento, like when he first got there, was he talking about, you know, wanting – the thing that I've liked is he's been preaching defense – defensive rebounding, transition defense, and basically how, you know, defensive rebounding is going to be able to lead to fast breaks. You know, obviously that's, you know, you want to force guys into missed shots. He can run off misses. He doesn't want to run off of makes. So we're trying to figure out, you know, if he's, because we heard this with Brian Shaw too. He talked about wanting to selectively run. So there's a lot of people, including my colleague Jeff Morton, that are pretty skeptical that he's going to stick to his word and that they're actually going to practice. Because you can't be just good at transition basketball. You have to practice it, and you have to spend time on the offensive end practicing half court offense. But he's also got to spend time implementing what he wants to do on the defensive end. So it just seems like a lot to try to roll into, you know, a month of training camp. So we're kind of skeptical, but also interested and intrigued as well.
And what I will say is Michael Malone made the same comments when he came to Sacramento. And he backed it up. I mean, he preaches defense and he really believes in defense. And it did take a little bit of time for that to really sink in. It wasn't until his second season as coach that we truly started seeing the improvement on defense. The first year, it kind of seemed like it was, okay, he talks the talk, but the team's not really getting any better at defense. But it was that second year when it really started to click before he, you know, of course, was fired and everything kind of fell apart for the Kings, but he got that message through to the guys that he needed to get it through to. I mean, he was the one who got DeMarcus Cousins playing defense. I mean,
yeah, that's pretty big.
Yeah, and something no other coach had done. And so I think that you may not see it immediately because it is hard to institute that type of change in one off season. But I do think that you will long term see those differences.
Yeah, and we don't know if Kenneth Faried is going to be around or not, but that's a guy who I think would really benefit from a guy like Michael Malone. Like, if he can reach Faried and get him to give a lot more effort and just pay attention more on defense, I mean, that's going to go a long way to helping him out, because that's obviously been one of his major flaws. But we don't have to, I guess, talk about Malone the whole time. You guys kind of been there, done that out there in Sacramento.
Well, it's something that still captures the imagination of Kings fans, though, because I talked about this a little bit on last week's show that, you know, Michael Malone is kind of the one that got away for Kings fans. I think it was last week's show. It might have been on Twitter. I don't know. I was talking to someone and said that Malone was really the one that got away, and so a lot of Kings fans still pay attention to him. And I think it's still relevant because there's obviously been a lot of discussion around Malone and Pete D'Alessandro, and the interviews and the quotes that they're giving now are really not painting Sacramento in a very good light.
Yeah, I kind of felt like Malone took a bit of a shot when he had that quote where he said, you know, that him and Pete will be together in a, I think he said, healthier environment.
Yeah.
And that was really, I mean, that kind of just spoke to the dysfunction from where he came from out there in Sacramento. And, you know, I kind of tend to think, you know, we hear that maybe Pete and Malone didn't have major issues like had kind of been reported. And I kind of wonder where Chris Mullin comes into play in all of that. You know, if Chris Mullin might have had a little bit more to do with it, I don't even know. You know, it's very interesting. And even I watched the press conference with Malone when he was introduced to Sacramento, and, you know, Vivek was pretty adamant about, you know, I make very careful decisions. This is a long-term hire. So it seemed odd that he would just on his own come to the conclusion that he wasn't the right guy.
Yeah, there's a lot that doesn't really add up, but, you know, yeah, Malone has said, you know, me and Pete didn't have issues, we're in a better environment. Malone talked about how there's not as many voices in the room, which it was kind of a known issue in Sacramento, too many different people involved in the decision-making process. I also thought it was really interesting that I saw a quote today from Pete D'Alessandro where he was referring to Sacramento as the place where we were previously employed when he was talking about him and Malone. Like, he wouldn't even say Sacramento or the Kings. It was so strange.
Yeah, that was really weird. I caught that too, and I was like, I mean, that just kind of goes to show you he feels slighted as well. So maybe this will set up some good rivalry games in the future. I mean, there's obviously George Karl with you guys. I don't know if Andre Miller's coming back next year for you guys either, but some of that crossover with the roster, with the coaching staff, and I don't know if Ty Lawson's going to wind up there, but we could have the makings of a pretty decent rivalry. Now we just need both franchises to actually, you know, have those games mean something when they play each other.
Absolutely. So when we look at that, I mean, you brought up Ty Lawson. That's the other big piece of the news between the two franchises right now.
Well, let me jump in real fast. I talked to Jeff Morton, one of my colleagues at Denver Stiff, earlier, and I kind of ran this by him. And it, you know, when the Nuggets hired Brian Shaw, I believe that Tim Connelly, the general manager here, was only hired like maybe 5 or 6 days before Shaw was hired. So, and it sounds like Connelly and Malone have known each other. Connelly says he's known Malone since before Malone was in the NBA, dating back to his time at Loyola Marymount. So I wondered with Jeff, I was like, because we've been curious why they're going with another defensive coach. That's what Shaw preached, defense, slow it down kind of basketball. And I said, you know, maybe Malone was Tim Connelly's target from the start, but he never got a chance to actually bring him into Denver because he didn't have the job here yet. And Malone was obviously – I think Malone was hired before Brian Shaw, if I remember correctly. Shaw wasn't hired until like June 25th in 2013. So I've just been curious, you know, if Tim Connelly, if this was his guy – because we heard a lot of rumors about Mike D'Antoni, obviously Melvin Hunt. And it seems like that, you know, there's a pretty special relationship between Malone and Connelly to where it could have been his target all along if he was free.
It's an interesting idea. I don't know of any, you know, connections or what their history might look like. the what I see as being the characteristic that would make Malone stand out as the guy to bring into Denver, and I think that some of this existed with Hunt as well, but players really respond to Michael Malone. They appreciate his coaching style. They appreciate kind of the demeanor in which he presents himself. Like you said earlier, he's straightforward. He cuts to the chase, but he's still, you know, intelligent and funny and makes good points as he talks. He just doesn't talk in circles like many NBA head coaches do. So I think that he also showed in Sacramento an ability to turn around and fix the character of a locker room, which seems to be the biggest kind of lasting damage of the Brian Shaw era for you guys.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that's something, you know, I took away from what you said and the question and answer we did on Denver Stiffs of, you know, that this guy can come in and change the entire culture within, you know, that's going to happen in the first season. And that's exciting for us. And it's just, I guess my feeling on the whole situation is we might have gotten a diamond in the rough. Your franchise, the Kings, might have jumped the gun a little bit and letting this guy go. And, you know, but then again, you learn in your first stop. So I'm going to be interested to see as well what Malone learned in Sacramento that he's going to, you know, maybe be more open to in Denver.
So now moving on to the Ty Lawson rumors. What's going on with his trade value?
That's the interesting thing. I think the team that would not have to worry so much about his off-the-court issues would be Sacramento, because you guys have George Karl. I mean, George Karl and Ty Lawson, you know, both North Carolina guys, pretty good relationship between them when they were in Denver. I would even say really good. You know, George talked all the time about, yeah, I've been texting Ty all summer, you know, trying to get him to work on his leadership skills. That was a big thing in Denver, was Ty Lawson not quite being the leader that they wanted him to be. But he would fit in perfectly in a situation like Sacramento, where you have the alpha dog and DeMarcus Cousins. Denver never really had that big alpha dog, because Ty didn't really get to play with Carmelo Anthony for more than, I think he was here for maybe 1.5 seasons. So you have the alpha dog and Cousins that would keep Ty in line, you know, if there is any kind of issues there. But more so, Ty just kind of defers on the court. So you have Cousins, you have Rudy Gay, and you have Ty. Ty's a fantastic second, third option on any given night, and can even be the first option. So I would think that a team like Sacramento would have legit interest in him, because he's still young, 26 years old. I don't think his off-court issues are that big of a deal. And it's surprising that they're getting brought up so much. Obviously, he had a DUI when he was at North Carolina when he was underage. I think it was a DWAI or something like that. And then he had the one here in Denver, and I think he had one before that too. So we might have three of them, which is, I guess, a pretty frightening, pretty serious thing.
Yeah, and Sacramento, not so much in recent years, but Sacramento does have a bit of a history as far as some incidents with DUIs amongst the team. And so I don't know if that's at the forefront of anyone's concerns right now, but obviously, you know, in this day and age, you know, off-court issues can really quickly turn people against a player. And, you know, whether there's something more there or something on top of those issues, I don't know. But it definitely seems like his trade value is pretty low from what we saw kind of in the rumor mill the last day or two.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, seeing guys like Ryan Russillo saying that he had a couple GMs laugh at him when he talked about Ty Lawson for the sixth pick. But again, you know, I come back to the fact that, you know, I think Ty is a very underrated guy as far as being a student of the game. I mean, when you talk to Ty Lawson, he can take you through a pick and roll and describe different ways of playing in the pick and roll, you know, how to kind of bait the defenders and how you want to lead him into screens. I mean, he's a very intelligent player, something that he doesn't get a lot of credit for in Denver. But he can talk about the game really well. And, you know, I would be pretty sad. Ty was the guy that, you know, I was kind of hoping. He wasn't an original draft pick of the Nuggets. They made a draft day trade with the Timberwolves for him. Actually gave up a pick that became Luke Babbitt.
Oh, you guys got burned.
Yeah, no doubt. But, I mean, he was the guy that I thought, hey, you know, we haven't had really had a Nugget for life, and it would be really nice if Ty Lawson would fill that role. And it just seemed like things kind of soured between him and Brian Shaw. Brian Shaw was a very kind of an abrasive guy who was supposed to come in and be a real player's coach. And there's just a disconnect between him and Lawson. And maybe it was because Shaw played the game a certain way and expected that of Lawson, and they just never connected. But he connected with George Karl, and George Karl really brought out the best in him and trusted him from a young age to, you know, have big responsibilities on a team that was really good as well. So it would be very intriguing to me, you know, if he was to rejoin that team, because I think he would be excellent with DeMarcus Cousins.
It is interesting, though, because a lot of the discussion around, you know, the Twitter sphere that I saw today, you know, was that the Kings would be silly to pass up this kind of a deal regardless of Lawson's trade value, just because it would be such an upgrade for them at the point guard position. And it's an idea I took a little bit of issue with, just because Darren Collison was really good for the Kings before he suffered what wouldn't be a recurrent injury. I mean, he had a hip injury. Those aren't common things or issues where you say, okay, well, that's going to plague his career. But he basically missed the entirety of the George Karl era in Sacramento, and we don't really know what he's going to look like there. I mean, from your firsthand knowledge of George Karl, is there reason to think that Darren Collison couldn't be successful in his system?
I think we talked about it. If we did a podcast a while ago, I think I mentioned how I thought George Karl was really going to bring out a lot of good in Ben McLemore. I think the exact same thing about Darren Collison. If they stick with Collison, you know, if you bring in Ty Lawson and you keep Collison, you have two really small point guards. I think Ty might even be bigger than Collison. But, you know, Collison is a little bit of a speed demon, and George loves those quick point guards. I mean, he can figure out ways to really have those guys run the show. And, you know, obviously transition game is big with George, you know, running off of misses, all that stuff. I think he would really bring out a lot of good in Darren Collison. I don't know how great Collison is as a starter. If you guys view him as your starting point guard, you know, it wouldn't be a bad thing to hold on to that number six pick in case an Emmanuel Mudiay or whoever else fell there. Then you get the size in with the point guard. But I think George would be really, really good for Darren Collison.
It was interesting because I just did some research on Basketball Reference earlier today. I was kind of looking at last season, how Collison and Lawson compared. Now, obviously, in fairness, last season was very much a down year for Lawson, and it was probably the best year of Collison's career before he got injured. They're both the same age, have been in the league the same amount of time, but what struck me is their stats across the board were almost identical, with Collison having slight advantages in different areas, both on, you know, per game and per minute basis. The one area that Lawson really stood out is definitely in the playmaking. I mean, he was definitely getting more teammates involved. There was more assists, higher assist percentage. So, I mean, that seems like the primary difference. Other than that, kind of depending on what you're looking for from the point guard role, I think the Kings can be okay with Collison. And that's my only reason I would say not to give it up, is that I think Lawson's definitely an upgrade. I just don't think it's as big an upgrade as most people think when they think of Collison in his Dallas years, for example. And having that maybe not quite as good but still pretty good point guard plus whatever you get at the six, I think is better value.
Especially when you consider that Cousins is, what, 24 years old?
Yeah.
That's crazy. I mean, you don't have to rush things in Sacramento at all. You know, when you have Collison at, you know, what is he, around $5 million a year, and you have Lawson at like 11, if they're the same player, then yeah, why wouldn't you just keep Collison and add a stud with that sixth pick and just go from there? I mean, it wouldn't make a ton of sense to add Lawson, trade the sixth pick, and trade Collison. I mean, you're kind of, like you're saying, you're losing two pretty good assets to gain one that may not be, you know, head and shoulders above what you already have.
Now,
but we want that sixth pick, though, so take Ty Lawson and give us that pick. We got big plans for that pick.
So the one reason I think that there may be a bit of a rush is that ownership has really put itself under the gun, saying that they want immediate improvement. This isn't a long-term rebuild. And the other issue you have is that because of the way that Malone was fired last year, I think that a lot of people assume that the Kings are working on a pretty short leash with Cousins. He's under contract for a couple more years, but we're not that far away from the point where he could realistically ask out.
Yeah, and that's kind of where Lawson comes into play. Obviously, is he's a, you know, maybe a fringe All-Star player. He's never going to make the All-Star game in the Western Conference, but you know, I think on his good days, especially if he's reunited with George, I think he's in that hunt for being a borderline All-Star guy. So you kind of get that name in there. You know, Big Three is kind of the obsessive thing in the NBA, or was a few years ago. So you'd have obviously Rudy Gay, Cousins, and Lawson. But, you know, you start looking at the sixth pick, and just like we're looking at with Denver, you're going to be able to add a guy there that's going to probably come in and start right away, whether it's, you know, Justice Winslow, Mario Hezonja, Willie Cauley-Stein. I mean, you're going to be able to add a guy that should be able to come in and contribute, you know, maybe unlike Nick Stauskas did last season, but you're going to get a guy with that pick that could add a little bit more. I mean, I guess if you looked at Denver's roster too, maybe you could pluck a couple other things out of there, maybe a future first-round pick or something to sweeten the deal. But to me, it doesn't make that much sense for the Kings to give up that pick versus keeping Collison and adding a major asset.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm coming from as well. Now, if we use this as an opportunity to pivot over and talk about the draft a little bit, obviously you guys are picking one pick behind the Kings. So you're looking at a lot of the same players that Kings fans are. Now, I know from paying attention to what you and Jeff Morton and the rest of your crew are looking at on a regular basis, you guys love Mario Hezonja.
Hashtag draft Dave Franco. That's what we're calling it. Jeff coined that one. But yeah, we love Hezonja. I mean, just getting to talk to guys on the team, especially even Jusuf Nurkić, he claims that his best friend overseas is Mario Hezonja, that these guys talk every single day. And, you know, there's been talk that, you know, we look at Hezonja's attitude. I mean, he is the type of guy that can take on that alpha dog role. And that's something that we're starved for in Denver. You know, can Hezonja and Cousins get along? Probably. Can Nurkić and Hezonja get along? Yeah, they already do. They're best friends. So that's our guy. Stay away from him. Take Willie Cauley-Stein. Take anybody else. Don't take Hezonja. But, I mean, he's a guy, though. I mean, if you like to catch and shoot, he can catch and shoot. He can create a little bit off the dribble. There's a lot to like about him. And then you get into the athleticism. I mean, he was – you know, he claims that he can do the same dunks that Zach LaVine can do. So, you know, he's a very intriguing prospect. And as you know as well, that we've been concerned about, you know, everybody says, well, he's not playing for FC Barcelona. But there's been talk from David Pick of Bleacher Report throughout the season and some other guys that, you know, they kind of benched him once he said he was coming to the NBA. They kind of gave up development on him. But for my money, I think he has the most upside out of guys in that range, in that 6 to 8 range. You're not going to find a guy that has more upside than him, probably even outside the top 3 guys or 4 guys in the draft. I think Hezonja is right there in the mix.
Yeah, and the reason I wanted to talk a little bit about him is I know you guys have really been following him closely throughout most of the draft process. It seems like once you guys were confirmed at 7, that was the guy you zeroed in on. It's just recently that some mocks started having him going towards the Kings. You know, people are starting to assume that because he's from roughly the same part of the globe as Vlade Divac, that, you know, Vlade's going to want to take him, which I think is somewhat lazy analysis, but what do I know? So there's starting to be more and more, but Kings fans are kind of playing catch-up now because we haven't really paid a lot of attention to him.
Oh, he's terrible. You guys don't want him. He's awful. I don't know if you saw, there was an interview today with David Aldridge and Vlade Divac on NBA.com. It was a Q&A. Did you read that one?
I did not have a chance to read it today.
There was a blurb in there where Aldridge mentioned that Vlade had spent some time around the Croatian Olympic team, and Hezonja's a Croatian. So I've kind of wondered, because we've heard some back channel rumors that Vlade likes Mario Hezonja. And, you know, if he did work with him overseas a little bit, you know, he has some probably pretty good firsthand knowledge of the kid. As well as Kristaps Porzingis, I've kind of heard through some back channels that, you know, that Vlade likes him as well. I don't know if he likes him enough to take him or if he'll be there at 6, but there's definitely a little bit of a connection, I think, between Vlade and Hezonja.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that, you know, obviously he's going to do some international scouting. One of the advantages that was touted when Vlade took over the personnel decisions for the Kings was that, you know, especially for international scouting, there are doors that open for Vlade that don't open for other people. You know, he has the cachet overseas to go around and basically get to talk to people and gather information that other teams may see a little bit more of a wall. So it wouldn't completely surprise me if they did go with someone like Porzingis or Hezonja. I think there might be riots in Sacramento if Willie Cauley-Stein's on the board and they go that route.
Yeah, and there's been a couple mock drafts I've participated in where 76ers bloggers are taking Hezonja third. And there's I don't know if there's any chance of that happening, but it's interesting to me, as well as we've seen some mock drafts of Hezonja going fifth to Orlando. And I mean, he would be another good fit with the Magic because he can shoot the ball, unlike some of their other guys on that team. And with Tobias Harris being up in the air, you know, I think the two threats for the Nuggets are the Magic and your Kings for Hezonja.
Yeah, you know, we're about a week out from the draft now, and I'm at the point where I've kind of given up trying to figure out what is going to happen from, you know, basically the Lakers pick to the Magic pick. I have no idea. I still think it's going to be Towns 1. I'll be really surprised if the Lakers don't go with Okafor, but, I mean, they could go Russell. They could go Porzingis. You just never know at this time of year. There's so much misinformation floated out there. And teams are trying so hard to protect what they might actually be doing that, I don't know, it's part of the fun, but for whatever reason, it feels like the draft process has taken longer than usual this year for me. Have you felt that way?
Yeah, I was under the impression, or I had a feeling that the draft was like this week, last week, like last Thursday or Friday. I was like, cool, the draft's next Thursday. And then I was like, wait a minute, no, it's 2 weeks away. Like it just feels like it's crawling right now. But I'm interested in Willie Cauley-Stein with the Kings. What is your read on him? We got to see him here in Denver. We went to his workout. Pretty interesting guy. I mean, the Nuggets had him shooting some mid-rangers, and they had him shooting some three-pointers, and his shot looked pretty good. Like I don't know if he'll ever be asked to shoot outside of the paint in the NBA because he's, you know, people are painting him like Tyson Chandler. But I think he actually has a legitimate jump shot that could kind of help teams, you know, if you pair him at, you know, center or power forward next to a guy like Cousins. Like, what is your read on that?
Yeah, so the reason I love Willie Cauley-Stein as a prospect is because obviously power forward's been kind of an area that needed an upgrade for some time now for the Kings. Jason Thompson's been entrenched there forever. And no matter how many guys the Kings bring in to try to replace him, he always ends up back as the starter. And Jason Thompson's fine, but he's not what you want as your long-term solution anymore. He just never became that guy. Cauley-Stein gives you the potential to probably step in, if not day one, he would be a starter, I anticipate, during his rookie year. He gives you not just, you know, the ability to finish around the rim. He's good in transition, has good hands. You know, can catch the lob, can do a lot on the offensive end that I think fits with Carl's offense. I do think his shot is a little bit better than advertised, just at least good enough that teams couldn't just abandon him if he steps out to 10 feet, which that alone, just being a good enough shot that teams have to pay attention to you, that could be enough. But bigger than anything, it's his defense. The Kings have struggled on defense for years. They were starting to show progress under Malone, but obviously that fell off again. They need a good defender who's versatile. We're starting to see the importance of having that defender who can play any number of positions. I mean, the Warriors just won the title, and a large part of their success this season was having a guy like Draymond Green who could guard a variety of positions. And Willie Cauley-Stein, I think, could guard four positions, maybe five in the NBA, and be a very good, if not one of those elite defenders.
Yeah, when we talked to him after his workout with the Nuggets, you know, he dialed back a little bit his defensive prowess just by saying, you know, he's like, I can guard, you know, three positions. And really, like you're saying, if he gets switched, you know, onto Steph Curry, say, he can guard Steph Curry. I mean, he's quick enough and agile enough to guard point guards, you know, in a limited role, to where you would be able to switch screens with him on pick and rolls. So he's an interesting guy to me. And, you know, George is a guy that when he had Costa Kufis here in Denver, we saw Costa at Ohio State shooting three pointers and taking jumpers. I don't think Kufis ever really shot outside the paint in Denver. And he did things that George asked. And that's why he started over JaVale McGee and Timofey Mozgov, was because George wanted him to set screens on offense, you know, kind of stand out of bounds and underneath the hoop on offense as well, and kind of stay out of the way, clear the lane for the point guards and for the guards, the playmakers. So I wonder if, you know, if George would be able to maximize Cauley-Stein, or if he would, you know, almost hinder his game a little bit by not allowing him to be who he potentially could be on offense, you know. And I don't know. George also said, you know, after the Nuggets lost to the Warriors in 2013, when Carl was kind of on the rocks with coming back with the team, he started talking about, you know, I'm going to start JaVale McGee next year. And he kind of started saying he was going to change his stripes a little bit. I was curious because he never got the chance to really show if he was going to, you know, make some changes with how he ran things. So I'm curious to see what he's going to do in Sacramento, you know, with Cousins, with a full training camp, as well as if they added a guy like Cauley-Stein. I'm curious to know if George would allow him to do things that George isn't always comfortable allowing his big men to do.
See, another reason that I really like Cauley-Stein as a prospect for the Kings is almost exactly what you just said. At Kentucky, obviously he's a very skilled player, but he was surrounded by other very skilled players, obviously. And he adapted his game from what Cauley-Stein's game was his freshman and sophomore years to last year was very different, because he showed an ability to adapt and fit into what the team needed him to be. And he also showed an ability to, you know, get his points, get his boards, get, you know, his stats without being the main option, which when you already have a guy like Cousins and you have a high usage guy like Rudy Gay, you need guys who can contribute without needing the ball in their hand a lot.
Would you worry at all about having, if your starting front court was Cousins, Cauley-Stein, and Rudy Gay, would you worry about teams just completely ignoring perimeter defense and just clogging the paint?
I wouldn't worry too much about that, because, you know, in his workouts, it looks like Cauley-Stein might have a little bit of a shot. Rudy Gay, not the best deep shooter, but talented enough from anywhere from 10 to 15 feet, you know, on his little mid-range game down on the block. I mean, you can't just pack the paint and give him the space. Cousins can hit from the elbow. I mean, you can't just pack the paint and leave him alone. So if you have guys who have some versatility, you can't really get away with packing the paint like that. Now, the challenge is, can they put shooters on the perimeter to really punish teams for packing the paint? That's been the issue with the Kings in the past. McLemore's starting to come around. They were hoping Stauskas would help there. Doesn't look like that's the case. at least not his rookie year. You know, McLemore had an equally bad, if not, or no, actually, I looked it up the other day. Stauskas had a worse rookie year. But McLemore's was right there, too. So, you know, is it to say that they're bust already and you write them off? No, but right now, it doesn't look like the Kings have a solution to really spread the floor and punish teams for doing that, which they need to address. But it doesn't worry me.
Right. So who else would be sitting there at six? Like, what other prospects are you guys excited about?
I think a lot of people are excited about the idea of Justice Winslow, if he's there. Again, from the defensive standpoint, you know, the Kings don't need a guy who can take over the offense. The Kings need a guy who's a good defender, good team player, you know, can fit a specific role. And there's the idea that he may not necessarily have to be a day one starter. He could kind of provide some depth, you know, maybe at the three behind Rudy Gay. You could go small ball lineups with Winslow at the three, Rudy at the four. So some versatility there.
Yeah, I liked – we saw Winslow in Denver as well. And the height thing was kind of intriguing. He obviously had shoes on. You know, everybody wants to talk about it. He measured 6'4" without shoes, but you know, I don't think NBA players too often lose their shoes on the court. But you know, looking at Winslow, he wasn't that much bigger than like Jerian Grant from Notre Dame. Like they almost might have been about the same height with sneakers on. So I'm intrigued by Winslow as a shooting guard. And like you said, if you go to a small ball lineup and play him at small forward, I mean, he's also a big guy. I mean, broad-shouldered, very muscular, just a thick individual. And I went back and watched that 2014 Nike Hoop Summits game when he was playing, you know, against, you know, Karl Anthony Towns, a bunch of guys on the world team, Emmanuel Mudiay, Nikola Jokic. He just made plays. Like, he just is a guy that he reminded me a little bit driving the ball. Like, you can see, if you want to say James Harden or something like that, you know, just a guy that attacks the rim almost relentlessly and but also can shoot the ball. I mean, his jump shot in Denver, when we watched him work out, you know, pretty good form on his jumper. So he's a guy that's very intriguing, especially when you consider the defensive side of things. And, you know, he's another guy that we're looking at too, that, you know, whatever you guys do in Sacramento, he may fall to Denver, and he's an intriguing guy as well.
And then of course the other real wild card is if Mudiay slides. Some people around Sacramento think that there's no chance Sacramento touches him, even if he's there. Other folks, you know, especially more on the national mocks, it seems like feel if Moody is there, there's no way the Kings can pass on him. So, you know, that remains to be seen. And then the other big name that really is kind of in heavy circulation anymore is Hezonja.
Yeah. What do you think about is Andre Miller under contract for next year?
He is not. There, it doesn't really seem clear whether or not he's coming back. Or if he might just be officially in a bench role as an assistant to George Karl.
Right.
That wouldn't surprise me at all, you know, given their relationship. Andre Miller has some ties and has been known to spend time in Sacramento even during his off season, well before going to the Kings. So it wouldn't surprise me one bit to see him end up in some sort of an official capacity as an assistant to Karl.
I remember I asked him once in Denver if he had any desire to be a head coach, and he looked at me. He just looked insane, like, are you crazy kind of thing? Like, so I do wonder if he would take an assistant role, because he is such a student of the game. He has so much to, you know, that he can teach guys, especially, you know, being a post-up guy. But he's interesting. I would be curious to see if he would take an assistant job and if that's what George could talk him into it. But, yeah, I wonder about Mudiay too, because what did you think about Ray McCallum? He played a lot, obviously, when Collison went down, right?
Yeah, it's interesting because McCallum had shown some flashes towards the end of his rookie year of really looking like a good player. And I still think he has a future in this league as a solid backup. But when Collison went down, man, McCallum just really struggled and didn't look like a very good fit for Carl's system. I don't know what was going on or what the issue was, but I mean, I remember actively hoping that McCallum would play less and Andre Miller would play more, which if you had told me that at the start of the year was going to end up being the case, I would have been just flabbergasted by it. I mean, but yeah, I mean, I think that I may be alone on this, but I don't think I am. I think a lot of Kings fans aren't quite as high on McCallum as they once were.
And I kind of feel like with Mudiay, you know, he's a guy that's obviously a top three talent. And you see those guys every year. You see somebody kind of fall in mock drafts and you see somebody rise. We've seen Mudiay fall and we've seen Porzingis rise. But on draft day, you know, is that going to switch? You know, where we think that Mudiay might be available at 6 or 7, is he actually going to go 2, 3, or 4? You know, I mean, could he really fall that far? And I think it would be insane if the Kings passed on him. I mean, a 6'5" guy that can, you know, is a very good pick and roll player just seems like something that neither the Kings nor the Nuggets should pass up if presented with the opportunity.
And now, where do you stand on Porzingis?
I would not touch him with a 10-foot pole. I mean, that's the guy where you know, he did log a lot of minutes in Europe, but I mentioned this on Denver Stiffs, and I kind of got ripped apart for it a little bit, but you remember when Yao Ming worked out and Yao Ming was just running up and down the floor and hitting three-pointers and everybody's saying, oh, this guy can really stretch the floor and he's going to be this dynamic 7 foot six guy that the NBA has never seen. And throughout Yao Ming's career, he took a total of 10 three-pointers. I think that's right. I counted up the other day. I think he took 10 throughout his career. So I wonder with Porzingis, you know, yeah, maybe he's able to shoot, but how well is that all going to translate into the NBA game when, you know, a lot of coaches, whether you can shoot threes or not, I mean, Dirk Nowitzki is a guy that's gotten the green light. Even Pau Gasol has gotten the green light at various times in his career. But do you really want a 7 foot one guy just hanging out on the perimeter?
I mean, you go back to young Kevin Garnett and they would play him at small forward and he would launch up some threes, but that didn't end up being a very big part of his game in the later years, not even the late years, but the, you know, his MVP style seasons, he might occasionally take one from deep, but it wasn't a big part of his game at that point.
Yeah. And I worry about his strength, you know, cause yeah, those guys, you know, when you're a big guy, our TV guy here in Denver, Scott Hastings, always says it. You know, he always says, you know, you got to realize when you're a 7 footer that you're 7 feet tall. Like, you should be playing underneath the hoop, grabbing rebounds. We saw in the finals how important offensive rebounds were to the Cleveland Cavaliers, you know, with Tristan Thompson and Mozgov. Like, that's a big part of the game. And when you don't have those big guys down low, and I'm not saying Porzingis can't play down low. I think he's trying to show that he can definitely do that. And he seems to have a hunger about him, too, of not wanting to be this bust and the unknown player. So I think if you have worries about Porzingis, I should probably have the same worries about Hezonja, right? I mean, there's still that unknown about European prospects.
Yeah, I think it's definitely different than it was 10 or 15 years ago, but it's obviously still there.
And
go ahead.
I was going to say, I think, too, that I would venture to guess that you are with me in saying we hope Porzingis goes somewhere in the top five.
Absolutely. The ideal scenario is that he's gone before your team picks so that you don't have to be the team that takes the chance on him, but you also don't have to be the team that passed on him.
And hopefully he'll push another top-level prospect down a little bit further on the board, like Moutier.
Exactly.
Yeah, whomever.
Exactly. Now, one other thing I wanted to ask you before I let you go. So, midway through this past season, it looked like the Nuggets had gotten a steal when they got two first-round picks for Timofey Mozgov. Given what he did for Cleveland once he got there, how do you feel about that trade now?
Well, the funny thing was they already packaged one of the – they got back a Memphis Grizzlies future first-round pick, and they got back an Oklahoma City Thunder future first-round pick. They packaged the Oklahoma City Thunder pick with JaVale McGee to the 76ers, so they only got one first-round pick. And it's more than likely that Thunder pick becomes two second-round picks. So getting one first-round pick that belongs to the Grizzlies in a couple – you know, they're probably going to convey that in a couple years, probably not till 2017 or 18. I don't know. I mean, Mozgov was kind of on his way to becoming a backup center in Denver. I mean, he was not playing very well leading up to the trade. And I don't know if it was because of trade rumors, if the team had said something to him, or if the Nuggets just couldn't figure out a way to utilize him. But I wasn't too happy with the trade because Mozgov is a guy that is a great locker room presence, worked his tail off. You know, he was out there before games doing a workout. More often than not, the last guy leaving the practice court, he's just the ideal player that any coach would want in the NBA. And when your franchise is giving up guys like that, something's wrong.
That's interesting. Now, while you were talking about that, I remembered one other thing I did want to ask you about. So one last thing. Earlier we were talking about Kostakoufos. Kostakoufos was with the Nuggets before he ended up being a backup on the Grizzlies. There's been a lot of rumors that the Kings are going to pursue him as a backup center this summer. You know, he obviously has that history with George Karl. Karl knows what he's getting out of him. I mean, what's your read on him, your scouting report on him as someone who did follow him day in and day out?
George Karl loved Kosta Kufis for the reasons why I laid out earlier. Same things. Kosta Kufis did exactly what George wanted him to do. He set screens on offense. He stayed out of the way on offense as well. I mean, he was the guy that I believe the NBA changed the rule for. You can't have guys standing out of bounds underneath the hoop. And yeah. Kufis was a big proponent of that. That's what he did. And he was just, you know, that junkyard dog. Set screens, grabbed offensive rebounds, kept a lot of possessions alive, gave the Nuggets a lot of extra possessions. But I was curious as well, because at Ohio State, he showed a lot more diverse offensive game. I mean, he was shooting three-pointers, baseline jumpers, and he shot a few baseline jumpers, mid-rangers, just outside the paint in Denver. But it wasn't something he did often. It was maybe a couple of times. But I liked Kufis for the most part, and I think he would be a great backup center. I didn't like in the 13 playoffs, whenever he plays against bigger physical guys, he gets bullied. He just doesn't really have a lot of strength. So guys can kind of bully him and kind of get him off his game. He's not the most mentally tough guy around, but you know, he is useful when things are kind of going well. And he's obviously a good rebounder. And like I said, just kind of a junkyard guy that's going to be able to, you know, get you extra possessions and as well as secure defensive rebounds.
All right. Well, Nate, thanks so much for your time tonight. It's always fun having you on the show and picking your brain, and especially now that we've got so much overlap between the two franchises.
Yeah.
So, you know, best of luck to you in the upcoming draft, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good, Greg. Appreciate the time, man, and, you know, figure out a way. I don't care how you guys do it, but get that sixth pick to Denver. We need it.
All right. No promises.
All right. Sounds good, man.
All right, so that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Sacktown Royalty Show. As always, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating. Leave us a comment while you're there. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, how we can be better for you. And, of course, go to sacktownroyalty.com. Leave us comments there. Engage in the discussion. Let us know, again, what you like and don't like. Always looking to make the show better for you. And until next time, thanks for listening.
Get a free audiobook and 30-day trial by signing up at audibletrial.com/sacktownroyalty. That's audibletrial.com/sacktownroyalty. audibletrial.com/sacktownroyalty. It supports the show and supports our sponsor, audible.com.